Well, I have two sons, so I spent a lot of time trying to raise good men, right? Men that are kind to women, mm-hmm. men that understand their duties, men that have a responsibility. And I think lesbians should raise all the men because they're super macho and yet sensitive at the same time.
Hi, it's your friend Bethany, who is turning 50. And that sounds like a big, bad number to so many people. I remember thinking that I had to have my whole life wrapped up in my early 20s, which is presumably why I stopped trying to be an actress, why I got married at 26. My friends were getting married. Our friend group was doing that. I think that was sort of the last of that generation that really got married on the younger side. And even in my 30s, I mean, not, you know, 10 years ago, 11 years ago, I was getting insufficient. I mean, it was a little over 11 years ago, getting insufficient funds at the ATM, writing checks that were bouncing, not able to afford a taxi downtown in Manhattan. And still in my late 30s, I did not know what was going to happen to me. So I look at the trajectory from my late 30s to now. I was a late bloomer in my career. I was always driven. I was always determined, but I always was a hard worker and I always was moving forward on the road. And I have a beautiful daughter. Like, I got my beautiful daughter. I have a career that is unfathomable. I have an amazing impact in the world from a philanthropic standpoint. So by and large, I'm happy. And, you know, I've experienced a great loss. I lost somebody who I knew for 32 years who was a constant in my life, who was not going to leave me. God, I'm going to cry. You know, like everybody else seems to have done in my, you know, quote unquote family life. He was someone who I could always go to Thanksgiving with or, you know, feel like I had a family. And that's really hard. So I've suffered loss and heartache and a challenging, abusive childhood. And I think that I've come out okay. And I know that I'm raising a beautiful and wonderful daughter. So my girlfriend's turned 50 recently also, and she's, oh, it's dreadful, and it's over. And, you know, I'm like, you're wealthy, you're healthy, your kids are thriving. Shut up. Look at the glass half full. Look at what you've accomplished. It's so vain and superficial to care. This is my process. This is my journey. This is where I am. I am 50. I am proud. This is what I look like. These are my dark circles. These are my wrinkles. This is what it is. This is me in pajamas. This is me crying. This is what it is. And I'm proud. So the dedication today is to anyone at whatever their age is. This is 50. This is my 50. My 50 is not somebody else's. This is my 50. It's the true 50. And it's a hard-earned 50. So happy birthday to myself. I'm excited about my conversation today with journalist Kara Swisher. She is a powerhouse. She has worked in journalism for decades, and she also founded the technology news site Recode. She has conducted some of the most hard-hitting interviews with the world's most influential people. She is a gangster. She calls people out. She's like a watchdog that just holds people accountable. So I am so honored and excited that I got to interview her. I'm pinching myself about the guests that we are getting. It's bananas. And I know you're going to love this conversation. So let's get to it. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm really excited because for me, you know, from reading about you, you are way more informed about what's going on in the world of business and tech and really, really just current and on the pulse of sort of everything that's going on, positive and negative. And truthfully, you tweeted that amazing tweet, which was just sort of putting you, me, and Hillary in the same context.
Yeah, I like to tweet Hillary a lot. I do that online a lot to her because she's a very good tweeter. Yeah, oh yeah. I know her very well.
You know her well.
Yeah, I've interviewed her three times. I'm going to interview her tonight, actually, for the podcast. Yeah. I know her really well. So I've interviewed her three times, and now this will be the fourth.
Oh, wow. Okay, so then I was going to thank you, but I have to give you a bigger thank you. I'm absolutely certain that she would not have come on my podcast had you not created that dialogue.
And
I was grateful. And then I just said, okay, let's all come on. And so I'm appreciative that you're here because I know how major you are and your time is obviously very valuable. I appreciate and relate to your fearlessness, but there's some point where you just sort of lit the match and were like, all right, I'm taking this thing all the way. I've got this. And this is what I want to know. And this is what we're doing. So how do you run this show?
I have to tell you, I was like this when I was a kid. I was very outspoken when I was a kid. It was irritating to my mom and continues to be to this day, I think. I mean, my mom always loves to tell the story. When I was third grade or something, I walked out of class and said, I already know this and I'm not going to stay here any longer until you get me something fresh. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know where it comes from. I think some people are just born a certain way that kind of bold and outspoken. And I didn't suffer, perhaps maybe because I was gay, that I worried about what men thought of me, I guess, in some ways. I think women hold back a little bit. And I think it sort of freed me. I mean, I did grow up in a period when being gay was not a positive thing for people.
Absolutely.
And I'm older, but I think I just was like, you know what? They don't like me anyway, so whatever. I'll just, like, they have reasons that are ridiculous for not liking me, so what do I care? And it wasn't not caring as much as I will do what I want and I will try to be, you know, fair. And I don't think if you go to a lot of people I interview, because I'm pretty tough on people, they'll say I'm unfair. I think it's just tough. And that's a very different, that's what I go for, at least.
That's what my partners always say about me. They say she's tough, but fair.
Yeah.
So they know what they're getting.
That's fine. Yeah, I think that's fine.
I mean, if you're straight up, and also, you know, I don't know about you, I'm not big on foreplay. I'm not interested in a lot of like small talk about how was your summer?
No.
I don't give a good fuck. So it's more about like, let's get to the meat of the matter.
Yeah, I think so. I think it works, actually. And I do think that in work, if you're like that, you can either go two ways. You can get sort of the reputation for a woman, I'm just talking about a woman, of being a bitch, which I think people, you know, love to like throw that around. Mm-hmm. But I think if you just keep plowing through that people just stop at some point, because it's not really effective unless you let it affect you. That doesn't minimize the fact that a lot of women who don't have the same kind of attitude don't suffer for it, because they have to edit themselves constantly. They have to sort of play the good girl. They've got to worry about the tonality of what they're saying. You know, there's so much talent locked in so many people that gets pushed down in a lot of ways. And that's where I worry, especially if you're a person of color, or you're a woman, or if you're not comfortable in that environment, you tend not to thrive well. And I think about that a lot in tech, because, you know, there's a lot of white guys in tech. That's it. It's just the numbers speak for themselves. And you wonder why that is. And I think a lot, not necessarily about bringing people into these tech companies, for example, that I cover, it's more about how do you keep them there and what kind of environment do you have so that lots of people feel more comfortable?
Well, it seems like the environments that you're walking into where you want to get information, the tone has to be set immediately. You've already said it because of your reputation, but it has to be set immediately because these guys think that they are all powerful. They've become God. So you have to walk into these guys that really, you know, supermodels are running after nerdy tech dorks. And so you're having to walk in and say, okay, that's all great and wonderful that you have all this money, but now what are you going to do? And how are you going to hold yourself responsible? So how do you do that? And how did you get into that world?
Tech, it was interesting because I was at the Washington Post, and I sort of was headed for one of those traditional Washington Post careers, which is be covering politics. You know, that was sort of the thing at the Washington Post. That was the winner. The winners did that, I guess. Not that there's amazing reporters all over that paper, but that was sort of at the time the big game at the Post. And I was so uninterested in politics. I just was like, this is ridiculous. There was a little too much closeness between the press and the people they cover. And there was just, it just was like, it seemed like endlessly bullshit. I just was like, I can't imagine typing this stuff all day. And when I saw the internet for the first time, I was like, oh, this is going to be big. You know, I mean, it was very hard to deny it. And a lot of people did. They thought it was going to be, someone called it CB radio to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, if you could reach out and talk to someone across. It was very Star Trek, right? And I was a fan of Star Trek and Star Wars and things like that. And I was like, oh, there's going to be a worldwide information system with these computers and they're going to be in your pocket. And I kept saying that and everybody ignored me. It was funny. So I just, I don't know why I saw it before other people. I think a lot of people did, but I was one of the people who was in media who did. And so I immediately said, what am I going to do? What's going to be affected? And I don't know, you're an entrepreneur. So, right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you see something and other people don't see it, mm-hmm. you go, oh, yes, this is what's going to happen, right? Yeah. Whether it's, you know, selling food or creating companies or whatever you're doing, it doesn't matter. If you see an opening, you see it. And so I just did because I think I'm entrepreneurial. And I immediately said, where can I go to write about this? And where can I go to understand it? And then I immediately said, I got to get out of Silicon Valley. This is where it's happening. And did for the Wall Street Journal and started covering.
What has been the most controversial sort of unearthing that you've experienced, or someone who we all look at as some major visionary that we would all be intimidated by, and that you just called them out on their shit and held their feet to the fire and they had to be accountable to you?
I think I've been very tough on Mark Zuckerberg, and a lot of the stuff I have been writing about for years now, people are like, oh, I see. You know what I mean? Like, I think I was one of the first to say, a single person having this much power over the world's communications is dangerous. There is no, you know, this stuff that's going on this platform is unregulated. Not, I don't mean about government regulation. It's that they're running it badly, and there's all kinds of damage we're not seeing. And so I think I was really one of the first to start to call attention to that rather loudly. And I kept writing pieces saying this guy, and I've done a series of interviews with him that haven't been very good for him. We did one in where he sweat like crazy. I was asking about privacy.
I remember. I've seen that.
And then we did one recently where 2 years ago where he talked about, he and I had an argument about Alex Jones, who was breaking rules on his platform constantly, and mm-hmm. he continued to let him do that, which I thought, you know, if you make rules, why are you letting people break them? And Alex Jones was the guy who's the broadcaster who was lying about the people that were killed, the children that were killed in Sandy Hook. And I was like, why are you letting him spread lies and misinformation across your platform? This is not responsible. And we argued about that, and he shifted very quickly to the Holocaust, and which I was like, oh, that's not a good place to go for someone who's not as intellectually, it doesn't have enough throughput to discuss this major issue.
Yeah.
And he started saying that Holocaust deniers don't mean to lie. And I was like, oh, I think that's their whole business, is that, you know?
Right.
So we ended up having a debate about that. And he, just this past week, has suddenly decided they do lie, and he's going to take them off the platform. And so, you know, a lot of stuff that I have targeted at Facebook is, I like Mark Zuckerberg, by the way. He's a lovely guy.
You like him?
Yeah, as a person, sure. Yeah. As a leader of that company, not so much.
Well, that's design. I mean, there's a designer who can do amazing fashion clothes, and then they want to run their business and they run into the ground.
Well, except that in his case, in a fashion designer, dress comes out, it's bad. In his case, QAnon takes over Facebook. And, you know, QAnon is so nebulous and weird and strange. And if they're allowed these without any kind of editorial discretion, it creates, you know, or anti-vaxxers or whatever. Everything is dependent on when he figures out that it's problematic. And that's a real problem for me.
What you're there for, to be like,
exactly.
Well, then they actually should be, they should be grateful for you, but you could save a lot of lawsuits.
No, they're not.
You honestly
they're not
could
grateful,
save a lot of lawsuits.
They're not grateful. They're not grateful.
Well, I am.
And I think Mark really does deserve credit for understanding. Social networks had been around previously, lots of them. And he understood he made all the right choices in terms of doing it. And at the same time, he didn't do his job as a manager to really, once it got big, to understand the implications. I think he understands it now. I think he didn't anticipate it.
Yes. So you're in your personal life and your relationship, mm-hmm. how is it to be? So I'm a strong person. It's not, someone has to be able to handle me. Someone has to be able to mm-hmm. do the dance with me, do the mm-hmm. waltz with me, the proverbial waltz. What is it like to be?
I've read about you in Us Magazine, just saying.
Oh, great.
You get a lot of attention.
Oh, great.
Yeah, you're in the tabloids a lot better than
I know.
Me. I was only in the tabloid once when I had a baby.
Oh, you were?
Oh, it was terrible. They kept speculating whether Jeff Bezos was the father of my child, which he is not. So no, it was really funny. No. And that was the end of my tabloid career, pretty much.
That's hysterical.
Yeah.
What's the dynamic of your relationship? You're married?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I just got married again. Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, I call it the triumph of hope over experience. So I was married for many years to a woman. We got married when people weren't getting married, and we had two kids. And I have an 18-year-old who's at NYU and a 15-year-old who's here. I'm living in Washington now because he's in school here. And my ex-wife and I got divorced, very amicable, but it was okay. It was, you know how divorces go.
I do.
And so we raised the kids together, but just two years ago, I met someone else on a blind date and we just got married and we had a baby a year ago.
Oh, so nice. Congratulations.
So I have everyone I've been with, including my ex-wife and my current wife, you know, they give it back to me a lot. I think both of them were people in their own right and didn't, you know, they certainly tell me the truth, which is really helpful in a partner. I don't know if you like that or not, but they spend a lot of time calling me on stuff. And especially when I sort of, you know how the work tends to bleed into your personal life sometimes, your work personality?
Yes, I do.
So it's, you know, they're different. I wouldn't say I'm that different, but it's definitely the techniques you use at work should not be used in the home in most of the time. I think having kids has been a really important part of my life. People are always surprised how many children I have, and I'm a busy person, but I spend a lot of time, especially these gay people at my time when I had kids, were not having children. Like we were one of the earlier people to have kids. And so I understand the value and importance of how much I wanted kids, like how hard it was to be able to have them, not physically, because I got pregnant really quickly, but how important it was. And so I spent a lot of time thinking about my kids, like, and focused on them and focused on the family unit more than almost anything else that I do aside from my work.
It's a compartmentalized life. Mm-hmm. But what do your kids think? Do they understand what you do?
Well, I have two sons. The older kids are sons. And I spent a lot of time really making sure they understood the world itself, you know, and especially because of the privilege they have. And, you know, I'm not going to do this like, oh, you should understand your privilege. But I want them to understand their place in the world and what was easy for them and what they need to try harder on and how they need to open their eyes a little bit better. And so I spent a lot of time trying to raise good men. Right? Men that are kind to women, mm-hmm. men that understand their duties, men that have a responsibility. And I think I've done really well. I always think lesbians should raise all the men because they're super macho and yet sensitive at the same time. So they should. Lesbians have good sons. They really are. They're like
That's
great
such
guys.
An interesting detail. I like that. That's a good
they
thing
are.
To know.
They're like, there's no like, I don't know. It's just they're really very and I also encourage them to argue, like with me and everyone else. Like we have like really fascinating discussions about all kinds of things. And I want them to sort of understand the whole gamut of people's opinions and everything, and not like they grew up in San Francisco, so you have a certain, like, you're going to have a certain group of people there. But at the same time, they were very aware of the whole world. And with the little girl, which is, I have a little girl now, a very different and interesting thing that I have to really think about. It happens to be a super sunny child. As you know, kids are different. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot more about women's place because I have a daughter. You know, I don't worry as much about my sons because I think they have an advantage. No matter, you know what I mean? White man in America really is not, educated white man with money in America is not my biggest worry. All things being equal, not having other issues. And so I think a lot now about raising a daughter and what are the signals that are really important to try to stress so that she feels confident. There are, you know, no matter how you slice it, there's still the massive amounts of sexism that still exists. I face it not with me, but watching it in the tech sector and the numbers, even when people have the best of intentions, right? It's pervasive.
How has being a woman and a gay woman helped you? Like, in what ways have you found it to be an asset?
Well, personally, it was very difficult the early years because it was a different period of time. Like, I think the world has changed quite drastically for gay people, although some of the recent rumblings from the Supreme Court are disturbing, to say the least. But I do think that I do tend to, you know, I don't want to say I do better in business because I'm a lesbian, because I don't think that's necessarily true. But I do think that often it changes dynamics with men, both positively and negatively. In many ways, men do want to get along with women. And I'm an easier person to get along with, because there's nothing between us. And so we can have whatever the relationship is, a business relationship.
Which there's never going to be the nuance of the flirt.
Never happening.
Got it.
So, but that's not, I don't think everything's sexualized, but there is an element of, you know, history and things like that, and people relate to each other. And one of the things that is negative, though, is sometimes when I'm, you know, especially with venture capitalists, who, not most of whom, enough that it's irritating, are kind of really sexist or say rude things, right? And they often say, like, they're like, oh, she's good looking, Kara, what do you think? And I'm like, still a feminist. Like, may like women, but really don't want to talk, objectify women, if you don't mind. It happens all the time. Like, men are always like, whoa, what do you think of her, you know, butt? And I'm like, and scene. Like,
and we're back. Moving
and
along.
Feminist, still a feminist. Like, I got to tell you, I don't talk about women's butts. Like, sorry. Like, maybe to myself in my own head, but not to you.
Sounds to me like when you're talking to men, you're disarming in some way to them, or you're unsettling. And it sounds to me like those are the conversations you own the most for whatever reason.
I don't know. I hadn't thought of that. That's an interesting question. I've had some very tough, speaking of Sheryl Sandberg, I've done some very tough interviews with her, Susan Wojcicki, who's the head of YouTube. And I have gone round after round around, you know, some of the disinformation on that platform. So I don't know if they're that different. There just happens to be more men that I cover, right? So there's by like most of the CEOs are men. At the same time, I've had some really lively interviews, which I think are really fun, with Mark Cuban. He and I have a really, or Elon Musk, who's certainly controversial on some issues. I just did a podcast with him on the Sway podcast for the Times, and it was lively. You know what I mean? And I think it's just because it was Elon Musk, not because he's a man or a woman. I think it just depends on the person. Some of them are very lively and fun, and some of them are tough, and some of them are, you know, very serious. So it just depends.
Now, this is going to be real controversial. So, question. Sure. So I am a heterosexual woman. Mm-hmm. I'm going on a date. Mm-hmm. You think I should pay the check?
Yes. Are you richer?
I don't know. I like to get a W-2.
You perceive that you're richer?
Hopefully not, but I don't know. I really don't know. So if I'm rich,
I think the rich person should pay the check. That's my rule. Whoever has more money pays the check. Perceptually has more money pays the check. I think that's fine. I don't know. Maybe you could go back and forth. I always pay the check.
You always pay the check. You're in a relationship with a woman, and yeah. I think that it's different. So I'm setting women back. So just be prepared for this for a second, and please don't hold it against.
If you want him to pay the check, you do that. You be you. You know, I don't know what to say. Like,
no,
it's,
I see. Yeah,
I get it. I got it.
You speechless. That was perfect.
You want to be taken care of is what you're actually saying.
Exactly.
Sometimes you don't want to be the one in charge, and you want to be taken care of. So say that. Say, can you pay the check? Because I feel like being taken care of.
Okay.
All right.
Well, that was good.
You be you, Bethany.
Thank you.
You be you.
Are you very tech savvy personally? Can you get on anything, do anything, figure anything out? You're helping your kids, the whole thing.
Yes, they cannot hide from us, because their other mom was the CTO of America and is an MIT, on the board of MIT and a Google executive. So my kids can't get anything past us. We're like, oh, really? We can call the head of Instagram and deal with that if you'd like.
Oh, my God. Anything. You can get into anything, log into anything, figure any app out, do all this.
We're not hackers, but we can.
No, I don't mean that.
Good.
But if you wanted to be, you probably could be.
I don't know enough. I don't think I have enough to be a really good hacker, but we're good. We're very early adopters. I would say that we had all the early tech stuff in the house way before other people did.
Well, that's hot to me. So you love oysters. Where are your favorite oysters?
I have oysters. San Francisco oysters are the best. I'm sorry. Up in Point Reyes.
You like the smaller ones, not the larger.
Smaller ones. Okay. Right. Exactly. And I know the Long Island ones are good, but I love the ones in San Francisco, outside of San Francisco. I think they're amazing. And I actually taught my youngest child to shuck oysters because he had to be able to do it for me. So he's
really?
So at our recent wedding, someone gave us 2 dozen oysters from Rhode Island, which were delicious, I have to say. At a picnic in the park, we did a birthday party for the baby who was a year old. And my son shucked all the oysters. And they were like, how did you do that? I said, it was a requirement of being my child to be able to shuck oysters. So he's really good.
To oyster shucking camp, of course. It's very common.
You know what? I'm going to get him a job. That's what he's going to do next summer.
That's amazing.
Really good at it. Yeah. And the other one is a great cook. My other son is an amazing cook. And so he cooks, like I was talking to the two of them last night. We were making a cake for my ex because it's her birthday today. And my oldest son was like, I was like, are you cooking Thanksgiving dinner? And he's like, well, who else would? It would taste terrible if you all did it. And so he's cooking the whole, he's cooking the whole Thanksgiving. Again, I say lesbians should raise all the men.
I agree. I'm going to put that on my dating profile.
They're both really straight too.
I only want to meet a man who has a lesbian as a mother. It's going to narrow it down, but I'll do it. Did you know who I was before you?
Yes, of course. I watched you on The Apprentice. I'm the only person in America who watched all The Apprentices, my friend.
Oh,
like,
okay.
People are always like, oh, you don't like Trump. I'm like, I watched all The Apprentices. I don't like them, but my friend, I watched all The Apprentices. And of course, you were one of my favorite characters on the whole thing.
Oh, thank you. Well, you're an expert.
You knew you were going to win right from the start. I don't remember exact stuff, but I was like, oh, she's going to smoke every single person.
That is really
show.
Sweet. Well,
yeah, you were good.
I appreciate that.
Who was the judge when you were on the
Martha
Bethany?
Stewart.
Was it Martha? I know Martha really well. Yeah.
Martha was that's the delightful
judge.
For you.
Yeah.
That.
she's you know what? Martha has plowed a lot of entrepreneurial fields in ways that people, I get that people have issues around her, but she certainly is an entrepreneur.
She has issues around me. I don't really have any issues around her.
Oh,
she
does?
She's, yeah.
Woo-wee. Oh, was she mean to you on the show? I don't remember.
Well, I can't remember exactly, but the words might have been, you are pushy, you're a show off, and you're not entirely necessary here at Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia.
But I don't. Well, then I would have said, thank you. Thank you for the compliments.
Yes.
I'm sure that ruined your life. I'm sure that ruined your life and stopped you in your tracks.
Yeah, it seems to have
You were great. You were great on the show. So I actually am very aware of who you are. And I'm fascinated by your businesses. I'm fascinated by, I'm really interested when people do things. When I went into the store, I'm like, huh, that's a good idea. That's an interesting. I'm always interested in entrepreneurs, no matter what they do. They don't have to be tech entrepreneurs.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm so grateful for you taking the time. And I respect you. And I just wanted to ask your mantra. So,
okay, I got one. No is a complete sentence.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah. No is a complete sentence. All right.
There you go.
Thank you.
No problem, Bethany. Thanks a lot.
She did not disappoint. You know, we had a little bit of sort of like back and forth. I don't want to say sparring, but she's not somebody who is going to just agree with you, which I love. And I mean, these conversations are making us all smarter. Let's just be honest. I mean, she has a point of view. She has an opinion. She's not combative. You know, you'd think because this woman holds people accountable and like major multi-billionaire tech people accountable that she's just going to come in swinging. And it wasn't like that at all. It was a really evolved, intelligent, informative conversation with a woman who is really, she yields power. I mean, that's the bottom line. And yet she's still, you know, just a mom dealing with homeschooling. So keep listening and keep continuing to rate, review, and subscribe. We have unbelievable success in the launch of this podcast, thanks to you. It's just proving the basic rule. If you love what you do, you'll be successful at it because I love doing this more than anything else that I'm doing. Just Be is hosted and executive produced by me, Bethany Frankel, Be Real Productions, and Endeavor Content. Our managing producer is Samantha Allison, and our producer is Caroline Hamilton. Corey Preventure is our consulting producer with the ever faithful Sarah Katanak as our assistant producer. Our development executive is Nayantara Roy. Just Be is a production of Endeavor Content and Spoke Media. This episode was mixed by Sam Baer. And to catch more moments from the show, follow us on Instagram at Just Be with Bethany.